This is your Morning Mayhem 101.9 Chai FM. Joining us on the line, Rolene Marks. Rolene, a very good morning to you.
Good morning. Listen, I don't know how the two of us have made it through the week. It's been emotionally draining, Howard.
It has. And you know what? I've been so good. It is 7:46 and I have not mentioned Megxit, but I have not.
Well, I tell you, all you have to do is go to the Daily Mail to get
your
fix for the day.
Yes.
Yeah, don't worry, I've already done it. I've made sure that we're armed with all the facts for the day, but it has been absolutely draining. So, you know, why don't we talk Israel?
Yes, let's do that. Except before we do that, Karen just sent me an email, a message on the SMS line saying Harry's coming to Cape Town. Karen, just give us a link to that. We need that information. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about Israel.
The first I've seen, panic, because now a story's got past me, Howard.
I think it snuck past me as well. Karen, just check your fact and let us know. All right, let's talk about Israel. Is there a way that we can possibly make the next election less boring? I don't know how I'm going to get through it, Rolene.
I don't know how I'm going to get through it, and I have to commentate on this on a daily basis. But yes, the Pam Shlishi Glida election, which is the third time lucky election. I mean, only in Israel do we toast things or refer everything to food, in this case ice cream, is panning out to be super boring. All we have is fights within the right-wing bloc, Howard.
But that's the point. I can't even discuss it anymore. Can't they get their act together? Have they not learned from two failed elections that they might have to do something a little bit different?
No. No, I think what we have in this third round of elections is that, you know, it's the classic case of banging your head against the wall. And when somebody says, why do you keep doing that? Oh, because when I stop, it's going to feel so good. It's that kind of analogy. But I think even the media here in Israel is getting election fatigue. We really are. You know, and if something major exciting happens, we're pretty much over it already. You know, bring on the 2nd of March. Let's get it done and dusted with, and let's go see Lionel Richie. That's basically what the attitude in Israel is at the moment.
Yeah, I can fully understand it because it's just been absolutely unbearably boring. And the fact is that, or there's a good chance that there can be, even be a fourth election.
Well, we hope not. You know, according to the latest polls, we're sitting with a lead from Benny Gantz's Blue and White, but will he have the majority to form a government should he take the majority in the next election? Because it's not about necessarily who wins, it's about who is able to form a government. Mm. And of course we issue with Netanyahu and his bid for immunity. You know, he got a major blow from the Knesset over the last week because they voted that a committee can be formed to discuss this. He didn't want that to happen. Could it be the swan song for Netanyahu? And when you have a lot of conversations with people all over Israel, people say, you know what, perhaps it's time. Perhaps it's time for him to step down. But the only place we're going to see this come to light is in the election results on the 2nd of March.
Yeah, that would be a game changer, though, wouldn't it be, if he had to step down prior to the election?
I think so. I think it could also change the performance of the Likud in the next election. Mm. He, of course, has come out and attacked the Blue and White, saying, you know, you've done absolutely nothing for the country, forgetting the fact that it is a party made up of three former generals who, Howard, of course, have done nothing for the country.
Yes,
but also the party is, it's a new party. It's only been formed in the last year. And, you know, it's just that ugly politics. You've done nothing. I've done everything. Your whole policy of anybody but Bibi is just not going to fly with him. And we're all over that.
Crazy. Really, really a crazy situation. Another crazy one, and I'm hoping that there'll be some resolution around this, is the story of Naama Issachar. For anybody who doesn't know the story, can you just give a quick overview?
Okay, Naama Issachar is a 27-year-old American-Israeli. She was backpacking, and she was going through Russia on her way back to Israel, and she was pulled over. I think she had about 9 grams of marijuana, something like that, and she was sentenced to 7.5 years on a drug smuggling charge. Now, from Israel's perspective, we say that the sentence is disproportionate to the crime, and also that basically it's a trumped up drug smuggling charge in revenge to Israel holding a hacker, a Russian hacker. And this week, the latest developments, after she has been denied two appeals, this week, Prime Minister Netanyahu had a phone call with the Russian President Vladimir Putin. According to Netanyahu, it was a very positive phone call. It looks like she could possibly be released. The Russian media or the Kommersant daily newspaper is reporting that she could be released. And this is in exchange for the hacker who has been extradited to the USA rather than trading him for Naamai Izakhar, but she's been held apparently in appalling conditions. And Prime Minister Netanyahu wrote to her the other day and he said, you know, basically he will do absolutely everything in his power to make sure she comes home.
Yeah, so please God they will get her home. It's actually so worrying because it's unimaginable what she must be going through and the state that she must be in.
There were threats to send her to a prison in Siberia. I mean, you know, we thought we were past these days when, you know, somebody who's done something wrong is schlepped off to the gulag, basically. But the general feeling is that the Russians are intent on making an example of Izakhar. But thank goodness that Netanyahu does have good relations with Vladimir Putin, and we have to give it to the Prime Minister. He has persisted. Apparently, the conversation was very amiable, was very warm, and Netanyahu came off the phone saying, you know, we should see her released and home safe in Israel sometime soon.
Yeah, well, please God. Let's just talk a little bit as well about the commemoration of the 75th liberation of Auschwitz. That is taking place. There is a large commemoration taking place in Jerusalem.
Well, this is a very, very important day in the calendar this year. The 25th of January marks 75 years since the liberation of the Auschwitz death camp by Soviet Red Army. And we have a contingent of about 46 extraordinary high-level delegates coming, including the heir to the British throne, Prince Charles. He won't be accompanied by his wife, the Duchess of Cornwall. She will actually be at Auschwitz with 200 survivors to commemorate that. But we have an extraordinary delegation coming. We've got a representative of the Holy See representing the Vatican. We've got the President of Finland. We've got the King of Belgium, His Majesty King Philippe. We've got the Crown Prince of Norway. We've got the President of Montenegro, a tiny, tiny country that has great relations with Israel. We have the King of Spain, His Majesty King Philippe, coming. We have the President of the Ukraine. We have the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence, as well as the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. Could you imagine the fribbles on that plane, Howard, with all the talks of impeachment?
Sure, nobody's going to be talking to anybody. Yeah, exactly. Wow.
We've got presidents from all over Europe, including Lithuania, including Latvia. There's been some kind of brouhaha with will the president of Poland be attending. There are issues between him and Putin, as well as the Ukrainian, on Poland's role during the Shoah. He's not listed on the list of delegates who are coming as yet. We've got the president of Hungary. We've got the president of Monaco. Very little known until recently about Monaco's role during the Shoah and people that they kept safe. We've got the Governor General of Canada coming and the Governor General of Australia very privileged to be at the Australian Embassy last night and hearing the ambassador speaking about how excited and how honored he is to accompany the Governor General, and hearing from a Holocaust survivor who herself yesterday marked 75 years since she was liberated as a child prisoner in a camp. It wasn't a death camp. It was one of the lesser known camps, but she spoke about how yesterday marked 75 years since the Soviets liberated her and what that felt like.
Yeah, incredible. Incredibly important event because, as we've often spoken about, the survivors getting older and most of them passing on. Very, very few survivors actually left who can tell the real story.
We did a poll this week because people want to know what is Israel's status as far as survivors are concerned. We have about 192,000 Nitzolei Shoah or Holocaust survivors left. But as you just said, it is so important now that we bear witness, our generation, and we certainly teach it to the next generation, not just the next generation, but those to come, about the Shoah, what led to the Shoah, that, you know, it didn't start with gas chambers. It started with words. It started with hateful politics. It started off with the singling out of the Jewish people. And it's so important not just to commemorate this horrendous genocide, but hopefully to teach and to internalize the lessons of the past so that we prevent it from happening again. Last night, the Australian ambassador remarking that his country plays a very significant role because per capita, Australia has more Holocaust survivors than any other country in the world, which is perhaps a statistic that many of us don't know.
I was actually surprised even with that number that you mentioned. I thought it was a lot less, but it's just so important. The other story that I did want to just briefly speak to you about, we're seeing more and more pictures and hearing more accounts of Iranian people in Iran refusing to walk on U.S. and Israeli flags. It's absolutely incredible to see the visuals. Students walking around. I saw it one even on a staircase that people were going down the banister so as not to walk over a United States flag. This protest seems to be gathering momentum and actually courage, and it's quite an incredible thing to see.
It is. It's absolutely heartwarming. The latest video that is coming out and being shared on social media and across the media is at the Shahid Beheshti University in Tehran. Students, a whole crowd of students, refusing to walk over American and Israeli flags while chanting anti-government slogans. Now, we have to understand the incredible courage of these students because the Iranian regime are using live ammunition against them. They are being carefully monitored by the police, but they are taking this tremendous, tremendous stand against the Iranian regime. And another one is at the University of Kurdistan in Sanandaj, that's in northwestern Iran. People, in this case, avoiding stairs painted with the American flag, and people taking to social media to say, you know, that we are not enemies of America or Israel. You know, they are our friends. We refuse to participate in desecrating these flags. And initially, thousands of Iranians took to the street to express their grief, and I use that in inverted commas, over the killing of Qasem Soleimani. But that has quickly turned to protests against the regime. So, you know, our thoughts, our prayers, and certainly our solidarity with the people of Iran taking a tremendously brave step and reaching out to citizens around the world, and in particular to the US and to Israel.
Absolutely amazing. Really, really incredible.